Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together to complete that honey-do list, featuring answers to your questions and head-to-head tool challenges. Let's get started with the show with the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul.
All right, Brian, welcome to episode number 28. And in this episode, we are going to answer a user question from our voicemail system. And we're also going to have some garage time where we're going to talk about jigsaws.
Yes.
And we're going to cover the topic of tools in general. When do you buy it? When do you beg and borrow from your friend? And when do you just go ahead and steal tools? No, not steal them, rent tools.
Right.
For the job. When, you know, what tools do you need to own? What do you need to borrow or rent? And that's a new segment we have. But before we get into all that stuff, we're going to cover a lot in a short amount of time. Let's give out our contact information very quickly.
That's right. You can always call us at 615-676-0877 or contact us on our website, handyguyspodcast.com. Use the contact tab and fill out the form.
All right, Brian, we got a question from, was it Lewis?
From Lewis, yes.
And why don't we just play his question and then we'll go ahead and respond.
My house was built in 1954, I believe. The exterior wood post on the porch has extreme wood rot damage on the very bottom of it, sitting on a cement slab, supporting, I guess, the roofing area there, the front porch. So very concerned about that. The damage seems extreme for epoxy-type repair, so I need some help. I'm really concerned about the amount of weight that is bearing on the roof area covering the porch. So anyway, please respond. I'd greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, Brian. So what do you think? He's got some problems with his porch.
Yes, he does. And he listened to our, and thanks, Lewis, for your question. And we've already responded to Lewis directly. But he listened to our question where we talked, or to our show, where we talked about using Bondo for
right.
exterior wood repairs and so forth.
That was a long time ago, and I think we stated that, you know, you can use Bondo to fix pretty much everything, right, Brian?
Well, to, at least for exterior wood repairs, you can use the Bondo. But the his rot is more extensive. And so the first thing that I asked him in the response was, how does the porch roof look? Is the porch roof still straight, or has it sunk down significantly?
Sure. If that thing, yeah, if it's not straight, you got some problems of it settling, you're looking at something way beyond Bondo.
That's right. So we'll start off with the assumption that the roof line is still straight.
Okay.
And his porch, he said, is a concrete slab, so we don't need to worry about the footers or what's under the posts being rotted. If it was a wooden porch, we'd want to know is
right.
the foundation and everything under there, is that rotted as
right.
well?
If the wooden porch was also,
right.
you know,
causing the sag. Or, and,
yeah.
Right.
You'd have all kinds of problems. So we're assuming that the posts then are sitting on
the
concrete porch.
Right.
We're assuming that the concrete porch is stable and in good condition. And so at this point, then we can repair
right.
this.
That's right. If the roof line is straight, you're just going to need to replace the posts in place. So the easiest way to do that is just to put a temporary support, a 2x4 or a jack or a 4x4, right next to the post that you're going to work on, and just work on one post at a time and work your way around the porch. So there's different kinds of posts. The post might be a 4x4. It might be a 6x6 piece of lumber. It might be a turned column or a fancier
right.
looking post.
And you can get the posts either made out of wood, turned as you suggested, or you can also find them in various man-made materials, materials that do not rot.
Right. The PVC ones do have a 4x4 wooden structural member inside, and then the PVC is so you don't have to paint it and it looks nice all the
they,
time.
They have, so they have the PVC clad
right.
posts, but there are also some that are made made out of various PVC materials that are structural, I've seen.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
And sometimes they have aluminum, or sometimes they have
steel in there
yeah,
or something like that to
exactly.
give you the structure. Sure. So find the posts that are going to look right for your house and just do one at a time. So you're going to put in a temporary support on either side of your old post and put a new one in. And if you're going to do wood posts, they make a little metal bracket standoff that you can put at the bottom of the post to hold
right.
it a half inch or so off of the concrete. and that's going to prevent moisture from wicking up into the bottom of the post, causing, because I suspect that's where most of your rot is,
sure,
and prevent that moisture from getting in there and minimizing the rot moving forward.
No, I would be very careful. Some of the wood posts that are out there, I'm seeing even in my neighborhood, which is a new, it's only 4 or 5 years old, that a lot of the houses were built with wood posts, and the wood itself is sort of a plywood where several pieces have been plied together. And it's not holding up. Even though it's off the cement, it's getting wet, and you're seeing where the seams were in that wood is starting to rot. And also where the railings attach to the posts, where the nails went into the railings, water finds its way down the posts, and it hits the nails, and it actually follows the nails into the wood itself, and it causes rot right in the posts.
Right. Here's a little tip. If you are going to use, let's say, a pressure-treated 4x4 for your post, mm-hmm. a wood post, and let's say your post is 8 foot tall, let's say it's 7 foot tall, and you got to cut one end of it, you're going to put the cut end up at the ceiling because the pressure treating doesn't make it all the way to the middle of the wood. And if you cut it, mm-hmm. you're going to expose some untreated part of the wood. So put the fully treated, uncut end down against the ground.
Right. And you can also get some products at the home centers that help seal the end grain.
That's right.
You will seal it in so it won't wick up the moisture as easily.
So if you do make a cut, make sure it's sealed.
Okay, and also on the top now, are those just toe-nailed into the supporting beams, those posts, or how do you connect them?
Yeah, you're going to have to look, Lois, actually, and see how your old posts were connected. They may just be toe-nailed in, which means just a nail going in at an angle, or it might be something a little more elaborate or structural.
Could be a bracket of some sort.
Right, so look and see what was there and replicate that. So that it looks right and it's doing its job.
All right. Hopefully you have good success in repairing those posts.
Now, Lewis, if your porch roof is sagging, that's going to be another...
oh, boy.
Yeah, that's going to be a little more involved. Let's say you've got a post and it's rotted and you've lost 6 inches of that post at the bottom and it's just kind of compressed over time and your roof line is wavy. There, you're going to have to replace all your posts at one time and you're going to need to do jacking at various points along that roof line to straighten it out. And usually that's done with a long temporary support all the way out to the ground in front of your cement slab porch. And you often see that as you're driving through a neighborhood where someone's had to take out all of their posts. But you can use those temporary supports to raise or lower a little bit each different section until it's nice and straight, and then put your posts back in.
All right.
You're listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
Okay, now we're back, and Brian, we want to talk about a subject that I enjoy talking about, and that is power tools.
I like power tools.
We haven't talked about them in a while, and a couple things. We need to talk, Brian, we have a new segment. You know, you're a new homeowner, perhaps, or maybe you're not a new homeowner, and one of the issues that we get asked from time to time is, what power tools do I need? And what is your general answer, Brian, to that?
My general answer is, you buy the power tools as you need them. So what's your project? What are you going to be working on?
And sure.
what power tools will make that job easier? But then the question comes, do you borrow it? Do you buy it? Do you rent it?
Right.
Do you procure it in some other way?
So I think your advice is correct. And you know, generally speaking, you budget it for when you're doing a new job. You have to take into account what power tools you need. Okay, so we have this new segment. We call it what? Beg, borrow, rent, or steal?
Buy, borrow, rent, or steal.
Well,
not or beg, right?
I beg. All right.
All right.
So
yeah.
That's our new segment, and we're going to talk about the various tools. Specifically, we're going to deal in these next few weeks, over the next coming months, on the tools that more than likely you're going to want to own. Right, Brian?
That's right.
These are the things that you're probably going to use. And, you know, it's important to borrow tools if you don't have them. So these tools are also ones you could borrow. But there's a good chance if you can't borrow them, you might as well just own them. And one of them, you know, in addition to things like a circular saw and, you know, a good drill, you want to have a jigsaw.
That's right. Anytime you want to do a cut that's going to involve a curve Even straight lines or different things. A jigsaw, sometimes people call it a saber saw, is a pretty useful tool for a lot of different things.
All right. Now, Brian, I bought a jigsaw. I did what you said years ago. I didn't buy it until I needed it. I needed it. I was putting a new floor in a bathroom. I was cutting some plywood around where the toilet was going to go and where the drain was going to go, and I needed to cut a circle around the drain. And so I ran out and bought a jigsaw. However, I purchased one that was not so good. In fact, it was one of the cheapest ones I could find at the time. And then years later, I needed to use the same jigsaw when I was putting in a mantle, and then after that, putting in some built-in work shelves. And I wanted to scribe the wood so that it would line up correctly against the wall. And I had some problems with that jigsaw because it just couldn't cut it. No pun intended.
Right. Pun intended.
At least it couldn't cut it accurately. So I thought it would be fun to take a cheap jigsaw and go head-to-head with a good jigsaw made by?
Made by Bosch.
Right, a Bosch jigsaw. So let's go out, let's head to the garage, and let's perform a head-to-head tool test with these cheap jigsaw versus great jigsaw.
All right, here we go.
All right. All right, here we are out in garage time because we've been telling you about jigsaws, and we've made some mention of jigsaws over the course of our many shows, and especially the importance of having a good jigsaw. So we thought it would be time where we did a tool challenge between a cheap jigsaw versus the Bosch.
Right, the Bosch 1590, what is it, ESV?
EVS.
Say 1590 EVS. So we're going to do, we've got comparable blades in the inexpensive skill, and roughly the same blade in the Bosch, and we've designed three different tests for the jigsaws to do.
That's right, and I see some of those tests, it looks like they're going to be conducted on pressure-treated, what is that, 1-inch or 5/4 pressure-treated wood?
The pressure-treated is 2x material.
Oh, it's a 2x, okay.
And then the light-colored piece of wood there is a piece of cedar, which is relatively soft.
Okay.
Just something I had laying around.
So my cheaper skill jigsaw might be able to get through the cedar. I'm questioning whether it can get through that pressure-treated.
And then and then we have a piece of half-inch plywood,
okay.
BC plywood.
Well, we're going to conduct these tests. We'll let you know the results. And my guess is, Brian, just from personal experience, that I'm going to tell our listeners, don't even bother getting a cheap jigsaw. It's just not worth the money.
You can stop listening now.
We're going to conduct a test anyway, and here we go.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with the Bosch, and I'm just going to cut about a 4-inch circle in a piece of 5/4 cedar.
All right. All right, that looked great, Brian. Good job.
Oh,
you cut right on the line.
Pretty close.
All right, now we got to try it with the skill saw.
And here we go. Okay, well, that didn't go so well. It vibrated so much I needed to add a second clamp, and then that helped a little bit, but then the wood actually split apart, broke apart from the vibration. And it barely made it through. Let's go for the plywood, half-inch plywood.
Okay.
Any of these jigsaws ought to be able to cut through that.
All right, let's do it.
Here we go for curvy line in the plywood.
All right, so now we're back in the studio, and we want to talk about, you know, the test came out sort of how we thought. The great Bosch jigsaw just blew away the cheaper skill jigsaw, and, you know, that's true to what we've often said. You generally get what you pay for when it
talks. Right, and the thing with the jigsaws is, you know, I've talked to a lot of woodworkers and a lot of people, and that particular model Bosch jigsaw is the go-to jigsaw. It's,
yes.
You know, if someone says, what's the best, you know, you go on a woodworker's forum or something, you know, what's the best jigsaw? You're going to get 9 out of 10 people saying the Bosch.
Right. And I actually went ahead and finally I didn't buy it. Maybe we should call this beg, borrow, steal, or get it for Christmas. But I got it for Christmas, and it's an amazing jigsaw. But perhaps it's an expensive jigsaw. It's a considerable investment. You're not ready to make it. And so perhaps you know someone that has one, and so maybe you can consider borrowing it, as right. I did at one point with your jigsaw.
That's right. You borrowed my Bosch jigsaw a couple times. I've loaned it out to other people. And so here we're going to talk briefly about borrowing etiquette.
Etiquette, yeah. So there's an etiquette to borrowing tools. So
there is.
So you shouldn't just borrow it and then just keep it?
You shouldn't borrow it and keep it.
No. That would be called stealing, right?
That's right. Now, maybe that works for some people, but it doesn't work for me. So I think, there's some people that are unwilling to lend out their tools. And quite frankly, I have certain tools that I will not lend out to most people. So from a lender's perspective...
The gold-plated hammer, Brian, that's a little too much.
Right. You're not borrowing that. So
it's too soft anyway.
Being someone that is willing to lend tools out on certain circumstances to certain people, I want to make sure that whoever's going to borrow that tool is properly trained, knows what they're going to do, and that I know that they're going to respect the tool and return it in the same condition that I lent it to them in.
I don't think I ever returned the tool in the same condition, but all right. I'm with you.
Yeah, a little wear and tear and so forth is to be expected.
And I didn't always have the proper eye protection.
Right. But from a borrower's perspective, if I borrow a tool from somebody and I bust it, I break it.
You own it.
I've bought them a brand new tool. I've bought them a replacement of equal or better value.
Right. I agree with that for sure.
Or find out what that tool would cost to replace and the cash.
If I had broken your Bosch jigsaw, I couldn't just then buy you a cheaper skill jigsaw.
No, you're going to replace it with that exact same model or ask me if I'd want a better one.
Sure.
And so I think that's critical. And so I'm only going to lend someone a tool that I think perhaps has that attitude. But the other thing, too, is if I lend somebody something, quite frankly, I almost write it off in my head because I don't want to have really bad feelings if I don't ever get it back as well. So I want to, if I'm going to lend something, it's not going to be something that I'm going to be completely heartbroken over if I never see it again.
And there's a big advantage over borrowing than renting, because borrowing, besides the fact that it's essentially free if you don't break it, is that you don't have a time limit. And generally speaking, obviously you want to get the tool back to the person within a reasonable amount of time.
Right.
But you don't have that 24-hour or 1-week time limit,
Right. Now, I have another tool that I will not lend out to anybody. And that's my chainsaw. I have a professional model chainsaw. It's, you see it on, what's that show with the chainsaw guys? Axemen. It's right. Do you ever see that show?
Yeah.
It's the same chainsaw those guys are using out there in the Pacific Northwest.
Sure.
And it's a very, very powerful tool. But you know what? Someone calls me up and says, "Hey, can I borrow your chainsaw?" I say, "No, but what wood can I cut? I'll come right over, and I'll go on over there I'll help
you." You're really
out.
Attached to that chainsaw, aren't you?
I love that chainsaw. That thing kicks butt. It's great. So I think only maybe one or two people have ever squeezed the trigger on that thing.
Okay, so as far as the jigsaw, it's a good tool to own. If you can't get the good one, try to borrow one.
That's right. And a jigsaw, quite frankly, isn't something that's going to be the first thing on the list of power tools for a homeowner to get. And so that's probably one of those wait till you need it kind of a thing. But when you do need it, you're going to save a lot of time and a lot of headache by getting a good one.
All right, that's all we have for this week. Until next time, I'm Paul.
I'm Brian.
And we're the Handy Guys.
Thanks.